Okay, so today we have Bianca Dijek, who will talk to us about a new vacuum for loop quantum gravity. Bianca?
Good morning from Kuala Lumpur. So I will talk about vacuum quantum popularity. If you go to the next slide, so here I give a short overview of the title of the talk.
Let's go to the stage
vacuum which we took out of this idea is that we should try to think seriously about defining the partner books, because in a sense it implements the dynamics automatically. And so the question is, can we use this to construct the continuum limit in the same way that standard polynomiality is based on dual back definement? And on slide number 7, I give an outlook. Basically, we see that it really makes sense for a topological series. Just for the reason as I quoted earlier, for topological series, it needs a vacuum state on a coarse triangulation and on a very fine triangulation. I need the same state, and it allows the construction of continuum limits purely via the elastic projective limit construction using polynomiality. And maybe a bit surprising is that this limit does not only describe the topological theory, but also excitations. In fact, we obtain basically a representation of a modified holonomy flux algebra. And as I will put see, basically, limited consistency is something which is similar to having the Dirac observables, at least under the defining time resolution. So what we found is that the state of defining the Dirac observables, that is Dirac observables, with respect to just the defining time resolution, is pretty large. So to slide number 8. So this idea which we will apply to BF can be in general assigned to any topological field theory as long as it can be discretized with topological field theory. So given a discretized topological field theory, you really can define your baking state. That's again just this amplitude associated to a basic building block. These basic building blocks via evolution of Fachner moves, via Fachner moves, also determine the observables which are stable under defining time resolution. So this question, to find the observables which are stable under defining time resolution, gives you an understanding of what the excitations are, which basically bring you out of the topological vector, and then you can try to apply the inductive limit construction to get the continuum limit space for the excitation. And let's go to slide number 9. So this basically summarizes the idea for topological theories. Let me just say a few words for non-topological theories or eclectic theories. And so basically, the main idea is to use Fachner moves as defining operations. Of course, if you have a non-topological theory, these in general do not commute. And the commutation of these Fachner moves would be comparable to the requirements such for the Dirac constraint algebra, or basically some weaker notion of triangulation invariant. So this in general is not applied, and so you cannot really a priori apply this construction of projective or inductive limit, because this is already at the basic level, the consistency relations are not satisfied completely. On the other hand, you can hope that they are satisfied in some approximate sense. So we could think that after some defining and then corresponding again to get the effective theory, you get the notion of discretization independence. And indeed, this would allow the construction of a family of trinomial consistent amplitudes. And this family of trinomial consistent amplitudes would be associated to a family of discretizations of, say, a sphere. So these discretizations are not necessarily simple, but they are just a family of discretizations of boundary manifolds. And if you manage to have the notion of defining and these trinomial consistent amplitudes, it basically means that you can interpret these amplitudes as basically being elements on a continuum boundary Hilbert space. And this continuum boundary Hilbert space would not be labeled by any discretization anymore, but only by the topology of this boundary manifold. And so you have a way to define the continuum physical theory, starting from diagram or tell you anything. I'll go over to the next subject. So are there any questions about this so far? Is anybody there?
We're here.
We're still here. Okay. So let me, you know, be getting more concrete from the general introduction and go from Ashika Lewandowski to DS. And the main idea is to do like everything, and the emphasis is really on everything, because sometimes if you go to the next slide, only half the dealings were realized. So there are a couple of works which came go in the same direction, starting with very early works. And the title was the two surface modulation gives the right connection, because in the end we will see that we did an excitation on two surfaces, or the polarity of the curvature, the serial curvature defect. Related to this, it is a non-commutative flux representation of loop quantum gravity introduced by Aristide and Daniela, and then we did it for SDG. And another motivation maybe for ours was we actually tried to take this non-commutative flux representation and define loop quantum gravity in the same terms in terms of E bar instead of A bar. To explain, A bar means basically a space of connections and you accept the space. So that bar is standing for this exception. And loop quantum gravity can very nicely be understood as the modulation on these constellations, Polanyi constellations. The question was, can we do the same for the fluxes in a kind of a duality construction? However, what we found in this paper, which is noted there, is that the usual defining which you use in the Ashika Lewandowski construction is actually not consistent with the construction of E bar. So basically what happens is that the arrows point in the wrong direction, and so this was one indication that one kind of dualizing dualization was actually missing. On the other, so on the left hand side we have all these ideas which really go in this direction. On the other hand, we have this wonderful unitary theorem for the Ashika Lewandowski vacuum. So there is a general question, of course, can there be another vacuum? And as I will show, I think we can really circumvent this unitary theorem by actually changing the item of observance. Okay, so let's go on to slide number 12. And this gives us a short summary of what I'm going to do in case it's to leave. So basically, again, the entire idea is to construct a vacuum which is dual to the Ashika Lewandowski vacuum, and it's very reminiscent in the theory of the standard duality transformation in statistical physics between the low temperature vacuum and high temperature vacuum. And you can actually understand it in the sense of going to a condensate from the Ashika Lewandowski vacuum, which you could see as fundamental because it is peaked on zero fluxes, going to the BF, which really has lots of spatial excitations, but is completely peaked on flat connections. So you see that these two states are basically, you know, like delta functions and fluxes versus delta functions and connection variables. So here, on the right hand side, you see one complication which will make the item of the observance, you know, slightly more complicated than the Ashika Lewandowski case, because we get a state which really is really constant on fluxes satisfied without constraints. So one main point is that you have to think more about the stage invariance issue in the case of DF. So as you know, in the quantum gravity, there's excitations which are supported on that, which I need to And you know, we can even think about further generalization. So Tempelkowski introduced vacuums with shifted background targets by just changing the action of these targets by adding a constant term. So in a similar way, you could think about shifting the connection to some background curvature, and I will comment in the end to possibility to shift the connection to homogeneous curvature. Okay, so that's really the basic idea. Let's go to slide number 13. And this is just a short recap of the Archimedes-Lewandowski vacuum. So you know that you can take a short nap. So the main point is based on rule max, which triggers the expectation. And we have the spin vectors as the basis in the silver space. And these spin vectors are functionals of the holonomies. And the main point to get to the continuum label is to get to the continuum limit in this construction is that we are defining operations on this map. So there's an idea of how to define and define new maps to build the embedded into a continuum theory. And these defining operations kind of exactly match the composition of holonomies. Then there is a very important notion, namely the question of what kind of observers are cylindrically consistent. And these are the holonomy and flux observers, which basically the idea there is that they commute with this defining. And so all the construction and also all these ingredients allow the construction of the cylindrically consistent measure, which just means that you can do computations on a discretization and find the result, which however is independent on defining the discretization. So you kind of can take this result as a continuum result, at least because you know that if you would define and define, you would always find the same result. And this is summarized in the so-called inductive limit of Hilbert. And here there's just a picture which show you the refinement operations on holonomies. So you can simply add just an edge and put a trivial case there. Or compose holonomies by subdividing an edge. So on the left hand side, you get a bit of more non-trivialization section for how functions of holonomies behave under this subdivision. On the right hand side, you will see that actually the fluxes don't really compose under the refinement. So the cylindrically consistent conditions for the fluxes are basically the constants under subdivision of an edge. The two fluxes are constants, but what you measure are basically just two fluxes which, you know, just pass through the same edge and you should get the same result. And so we will see later that this is a situation of the cylindrical vacuum. So let's go to slide number 14 and 15. Where I just shortly introduced the setup for the VF vacuum. So what we are going to do with this, you know, actually using a substantial version of loop causality. So this is actually an important change. And I'm just commenting that I actually follow a pattern, namely there was the paper by Valentin and Matteo, which pointed out that for VF quantization, with gauge fixing and all, you need the full simplicial context to do that. And for instance, Bastian Buau, which is color triangulation, also introduced more regular triangulation. So the situation will be much more regular than with VF, and of course, we cannot really, you know, talk about so easy anymore about changing topology and so on, but this can really automatically use the VF vacuum. So instead of embedding the dual graph, we actually embed the triangulations there for the moment we really just embed the derivatives of the triangulation. And the defining operations, as we spoke about Fachner rules, will be given by operation on the triangulation and not on the dual. and there I deconstructed the potential limit of phase, right, the G phase spaces. Why not? This is the same construction as we are going to use here. And he used the Arctic Lewandowski embedding. So what we are just going to use is instead another embedding, but otherwise this is the same idea. Okay, so let's go on to slide number 16, which is more detailed. So we choose in many modes with an auxiliary matrix, and the auxiliary matrix is just there to allow you to speak of geodesics and so on to kind of go to something which is piece by linear but embedded. So what we are going to use is a set of embedded translations. The embedding means that we embed the vertices which can recall in the matrix. And everything else, like edges and tightness and so on, is given by the basically by geodesics or geodesic slopes. So this is where the embedding takes part. So then quite often we will refer to the dual context. How you then construct the dual context, so the details of how you put the node for the dual context inside the tetrahedron will not actually matter. And for practical purposes, we keep a root node, which just means that we will take the letter. And so we actually use the finding operator, which will be given by so-called Alexander moves. So Alexander moves were very popular before Putnam moves, invented Putnam moves. And the advantage of the Alexander moves is that they are completely defining. However, you could actually also use this partner which are defining. And this notion of defining operation exists a set of the type of triangulation with a partial order. And if you maybe adjust the choice of set of triangulation, you can maybe always obtain the partial directed order, which means that any two triangulations have a common defined. So here's the standard which we can actually go fast through it. So we have kind of, they look up in a mathematical box, it has kind of a complicated description, but the idea is really that we subdivide a simplex or a subsimplex and, you know, put a vertex in the subsimplex, connect this vertex to all kind of major vertices you can find. And so here we have some examples and even the two, so you can subdivide a triangle and you get something which is more commonly known as the 1-3 pattern move. But you can also subdivide an edge, and I embed between the dual section. So in D equals 2, the situation is quite nice because there are just two Alexander moves. Let's go on to next slide. And we have D equals 3. So there you can subdivide the tetrahedron, and this gives you usually one form. You can subdivide the triangle, which you see there. So you put basically a vertex in the middle of the triangle, or wherever you want, because the vertices are embedded. And then you connect this vertex with all these five vertices which are remaining, and so you get the number of new synthesis. Three synthesis. Maybe actually the rule picture is not quite correct. Okay. And we can go on and subdividing an edge. And for the subdividing an edge, the Alexander move depends technically on the number of the tetrahedra, which has an edge common. So technically, there are infinitely many of these moves. Let's go on to the next slide. So here, I will give the description of this in an underlying field space. So for now, we will work with basically gauge invariant field space. have the source logic as a root. So of course you can consider any loop you want, but then you have to transform this source back to the root. And we consider, of course, integrated centrifugal fluxes, which are also transported to the root. And we can actually understand these as vector fields acting on functional holonomies, which anyway there's no other choice in case you work actually with this field or finite groups. And we will later see that we need to exponentiate these vector fields. So indeed, with the two, these integrated transition factors are labeled by a path pi in the one skeleton of the triangulation. For d equal to 3, these fluxes will be labeled by surfaces. And as you can imagine, so these fluxes list all in some different coordinate space. So you have to transform all these fluxes to common coordinate space. So in d equal to 2, you will see that we have kind of almost parametric choice for doing that. In d equal to 3, we have to envision to specify a tree on the surface. Okay. And the Poisson bracket is really reducible from the basic standard Poisson bracket, which we have for fluxes and group elements. And so these come up and actually also become at some point calculated these Poisson brackets between fluxes, including the summative transport via a system of paths and for these fluxes. So that's four. I hope you know what the holonomy is, so I continue to explain these integrated nutrition classes. And so we came up again and again. So in the equal to 2, we have actually these classes, and we need to want to integrate these classes. And we want to do that in the common reference frame, so we have to parallel transport every flux to some common reference frame. And indeed, with 2, there's almost a canonic choice for doing that, both in the continuum, so there's a short formula there, but also in the triangulation. So the ingredient is for these fluxes is that we choose the path pi that is a fixed line in the triangulation. And that is, you know, source logic and the target logic in the triangulation. And through this path, you can associate basically this red line, which describes the main parallel transport, the flux with the longest path. And in addition, because we do this root thing, we need a way to transport the integrated flux back to the root, which you can do by fixing, you know, a tree one and four by triangulation. So on the right hand side, we really have the formula for the flux, for the integrated flux. So basically, you take the flux associated to the first edge, transport it to the root, which is only H1. You take it for the 2, for the second flux, take it again only, which now is a bit different, H2, transport it to the root, and so on. And you add this part. So in 2 plus 1, this step is an interpretation. You know, some kind of integrated vector from the source vertex to the target vertex of the path. So imagine that you're completely flat, so all the belongings are flat. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's really just the vector from the source vertex to the target vertex, irrespective of, you know, how you form the path. Positive curvature is like it changes. So these observers are motivated by actually the actual derived observers in 2 plus 1. But to get these actual derived observers, you have to close the path. And in this case, they just measure the spin or the violation of the Gauss constraint. So in this case, they would not measure anything, so we have to consider all the paths. Okay. So this is the definition of these classes in 2 plus 1. Next slide will be 3 plus 1. So we go to 21. Oh, sorry. one point, because this composition of integrated visual factors is related to the composition of colonies, which is an optical velocity minimum. So you can compose two integrated factors, which just means that as colonies, you combine the two factors to new factors. Again, you have the ratio of RA transport, and since you do the root, same transport to the root, the RA transport we have to take is a closed loop starting from the root O, going to the starting point of phi 1, going to the starting point of phi 2, and going back to the root. And so you get the same direct structure. Well, structure there. And this is defined to the
Thank you.
subdivide an edge of this isolation into two calculations. Now I can consider this dual to the two objects. And what I have drawn on the lower left hand corner is this is a dual graph associated to these two pieces of triangulation, and the change from red to blue is the change from the red stuff to the blue stuff to the blue one. What you can do is to glue the open edges together, and you get basically this funny dual graph in the right hand side. But what we do is we put an amplitude dual on it, which just consists of delta functions of topology. And after you partner moves to the hypersurface, we glue this dual back to the hypersurface by integrating over the old topology spaces over the red edges. So this implementation of the dual graph or the dual supercomplex is quite helpful actually, because you can count how many delta functions you need and so on. And you can make several choices, but again, they all don't really matter. So the refining which I have called board E here of the base function is given by the formula which is depicted there. So again, the formula is again nothing else but what you would do to basically do a partner move with dual a sufficient complex for the activity. So you integrate these amplitudes, which is a bunch of delta functions, to psi, and since it's just delta functions, you can solve almost all of them except one. And this one delta function, it is a delta function associated to the phase, which is this blue edge only. So it just imposes that you don't have any curvature at this additional vertex. And so you rename this as delta function. Then you can solve three other delta functions for the three old variables. However, you actually started out with five old variables because you have five edges. And so indeed, what you get if you solve three of these delta functions, the remaining integral just implements a Gruber ranging on the two old nodes. So actually, if you start with the base invariant function, you can just gauge fix. And so here I made the choice of gauge fixing, which actually tells you later on also about how the root behaves if you happen one of the kinds of the root. And so the final formula which you see on the right hand side of this defining operation for wave function, you multiply the wave function, and then you just have to replace smoothness in the argument of the wave function for all these other new holonomies. But what the principle behind is that these holonomies, you know, basically stay the same. So that's the entire idea of it. And as you can see, we just added a piece of flat curvature or flat holonomies, because for the new phase, we really stay just flat. So let's go on to the case. And here, it is a gauge fixing which you can choose in this construction, determines behavior of the root. In case one of the triangles involved is actually a root. So in this case, it's actually that not only holonomies going through the region are presumably consistent, but also holonomies starting at root or starting at any of these vertices that you use in the gauge. So there are actually abstract formula for the holonomy being presumably consistent. It doesn't matter if you first multiply the holonomy operator to your wave function and then define, or whether you first define the wave function and then multiply the appropriately defined holonomy to ein Faktor der Kernkürze und zum Geldrechnung als Rot genutzt wird, die Farming. Das ist das, was ich drücken sehe.
And then it's fine. So in this case, what happens is
And all what happens is that in the end, you shift the same argument. So for one case, you have to have a replacement rule, and in the other case, you have to directly in the base function. But if you apply this replacement rule, you get the same result. And so the proposition of, we now see why we needed the proposition rule for structures, because after defining to get this the defined structure, you have to propose these two elementary structures associated to the two edges. Okay. Let's go on to the next slide. Number 29. And so I just came and that the same mechanism that is developed at 3+1 dimension. So 3+1, we can do the same game, and that is really helpful to think of these new two complexes. And so, for instance, for subdividing a tetrahedron, you glue this funny map, which is here, and map is blue, with blue edges, and as you can see, or not, because it's good after the safety important. And subdividing the triangle is a more complicated context, which could get the composition of partner movements. And so that's an additional case, which is subdividing the edge. And in this case, again, the thermodynamically consistency of the indicated structures appears because now both surfaces, if you take the null, it tells you that closed surfaces, the indicated structure of the closed surface, is zero, and what you do is to move your surface by gluing a piece of closed surface. Okay, so let's go on to number 30. And I try to say a few words about getting the measurement. And, the idea was just to take the Archimedes Lewinsky measure, do light everything, and see what we get. So here, again, is my second recap on the Archimedes Lewinsky measure. So what you do, you start with the so-called vacant state, which basically is the state which gives, for all connection, one, so it's a constant function of the connection. You have the equation operators, and these four equation operators are actually just given by the Lovinsky operators. They describe spin networks. There's a spin network basis, and it can, excite, also excite the state, or it might imply that it is this spin network function to your vacant state. And then you can define the measure on this basis, for instance, and this measure. First time you see it's always surprising, it's just given by the pointer data, which here is zero. If any of the spin labels is non trivial, then it gets one if all of the spin labels are trivial. Okay, so that's the idea, and on page 31, I hope we apply this first step to the VS state. So here you get the adagium and an idea of what the excitation are. So now we can still have this slight complication of each invariance. So we consider fixed time dilation and the gauge fixed with the maximal phi and the dual and the dual complex. The nice thing about the phi, so the phi visits all edges, so it's the new finite transport from the given vertex. And any dual edge, which is not in the tree, is called a leaf, which are the lands in this picture. So closing, putting this leaf on a tree gives you a unique cycle. And the fact the leaves are in one-to-one correspondence, the fact of so-called fundamental cycles. Fundamental cycles means that cycles, and there's another type of cycles like moving these fundamental cycles. So different leads can get you with a set of fundamental cycles, which are just connected with each other by composition cycles. So the C gives you actually often like A to count basically the number of data functions which are necessary to put on the SAQ, and this is just given by the number of your leads. So the SAQ, which in the end does not depend on the tree because you just put all the necessary cycles to zero. And by the way, we put all cycles to zero, so also the non-consecutive cycles we put to zero. So it's a special state and whatever we have. Yes, state. Then there, you take a delta function of all these loops associated to the cycle, which of course PL, and in the case it's working, it's just giving up a delta function. And these loop elements are associated to the leaf. And so again, in this case, it's much easier to work as a Hollandian notation. The state will look like in the loop. So in this case, it would be just the constant in fluxes satisfying the Gaussian space. So if you work with the fixed group or the leading group, you can easily see that we get the state to be a constant and give you all the implications which satisfy the Gaussian space. Which is really the dual relation of the architecture that we are taking again. Again, we need creation operators for our expectations. So for article velocity, we are the only. So first of all, we take the integrated exponentiating fluxes. And so we get the data states, which are now labeled by the loop elements associated to the leaf. We get these by applying right shifts to the DSA. And so in the matrix version, you get this expression. So what we see are that the expectations are labeled as group elements. And since in a case we have a group, you can actually overreach at the root and everything goes through. So we have the expectations, and on page 32, we can define the measure again in naively copying just the article velocity function. So they have the basis labeled of expectations labeled by group elements to be also to be defined a measure which should not be AL but EF, which is really just a function on defined on the basis. And we define it similar to article velocity. We just define this as kind of some funny delta applied to alpha we do the same as we found the ductal pellets in the spaces. And not only to explain it. So we need to think about the thinner porous filamentous resistance. And indeed for the bore amplification, this is the case, because for the bore amplification, every time you add the cycle, you just add it once in this measure. But for choosing the bore bender, with the active vertex or cycle, you actually add a delta function. And so you still get the same measure of different, or in a quarter of different calculations. So let's go on to slide number 4. So what you could do if you choose the bore bender, you need to modify the inner product to make it the point of resistance. And so one proposal is that if you have some equation of your root delta function, by deep balance, you can just divide by the norm of the Lennard factor, which in this case is just given by the FAQ. And looking on that, and hopefully this is really useful. And a slightly different setup, because we are discussing the consistency of the GPS charges in the lemma. But, you know, maybe a different idea from Benjamin. Actually, what you do here is the same, you basically, it's equivalent to the law of amplification. So, again, in this case, you need to exponentiate fluxes, which I hopefully managed to say later that this doesn't really is too bad. General lesson which we can take from that, which I took actually from that, which is that, you know, with inductive fingerprint function, it always wants to put the discrete topology on the expectations, both in the actually single configuration space. So what we actually do is to reuse our configuration space classes. Particular log B, we basically have a certain, you know, discrete topology in the dual path, which is connected to having an over-key filler space and so on, with this deviators which are given by the space. And for BF, we have the D minus 2 objects, the curvature fits, and these are limited to 2 deviators. So interestingly, Andrei Okolov just recently also was interested in applying kind of the stunt, you know, IQG techniques, you could say, on the inductive fiber space construction to the case where your configuration space is non-compact, part of the case simply with fluxes. And he had some kind of linearity assumption, so he actually generalized already some more specific linearity assumption of Kiyosaki. And so he considered configuration spaces I. And he did it a bit more nicer than our construction of copying the optical velocity measure. So he considers the projected limit of density matrices. And they take this projected limit because density matrices acting a function like of dual to the inner space construction. However, this resides in kind of an inductive inner space. And what you find there is also that you end up with a bore amplification of I. So it would be nice to generalize this to the more complicated situations of different spaces of linear. But it basically, you know, shows that there seems to be some general tendency that the similar space function always wants to kind of compact. But the case is that it's not compact, it's actually compact choices. Okay, so let's go on. So you could think of deformations and generalizations, including basically this construction shift. And in the end, what the method that we saw, the symmetry group, which we really want to think about homogeneous connections. But since I'm running out of time, let me just go on to slide number 36, where I comment shortly on the spatial distribution of symmetry.
If I define this new vacuum initially on a given graph, idea of a procedure to take a refining limit, and you hope that in this way you get a continuum notion of the vacuum, which does not depend on the initial graph and is not, and it's regularly independent. So my question is, so would this at the end of the day be a state in the usual Lashtegger-Lewandowski-Hilbert space, or it's some independent construction you're doing? And if it is something that you hope is going to end up in the usual Hilbert state, can you then just try to write it formally in terms of functionals of the connections, like let's say you would do for the Kodama state? Thank you.
So this construction is, you know, because of the different refinements, is different from the actual analogy. So in the end, what we have seen actually from the discussion about the delta functions, and it's a relatively different. And the state, you know, with respect to the, to on a fixed, if you take the state on a fixed population, I showed you that the inner product is actually given by the harm measure. But
okay, stop here, please. So at the level of a fixed triangulation, at first sight it looks like it's the same in the state, same scalar product, and in fact your vacuum can be written as a little combination of usual spinet on that graph.
Yeah.
But then
you're
saying
you cannot really take this harm measure without change, so you kind of, you know, have to change other to recognize that. So this situation, you should not be afraid of, but the common situation actually is for the field tuning. So what you do is you construct a condensate space, you know, and these condensate states are always outside of the standard Hilbert space, if you go to the continuum Hilbert space. So it's a bit hard to compare the continuum Hilbert spaces because they are, you know, based on completely different findings. So the way you define
more questions? Not the same thing again.